Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm glad you joined me tonight. I had a special guest lined up for tonight, and she's caught the flu. So I looked through some of my paperwork, and I had planned a couple things earlier in the week and ended up having guest speakers. So one of the things I'd like to go back to, if you can all remember this young woman, 14-year-old, Bailey Silberstein. She is a student in a middle school in northern Florida, and she's the young girl that wanted so badly to start a gay-straight alliance. And her idea was to start it in the afternoon as an after-school activity. And apparently the minute she brought this up with the school powers that be, this public school, they told her that they were sorry, but that budget wasn't permitting them to run the after-school care and after-school activity list anymore because there's just not enough revenue. So she pursued it a little bit more and really hasn't gotten anywhere, and it did go before Tallahassee, and they still have not allowed her to do this. So when I follow up on her, when I Google and look for information about her, every now and then I find another little story that she's still fighting. And so you all know, I'm trying very hard. It's hard to get a hold of somebody like this because, you know, she's pretty protected. And so just to make a phone call and say, oh, I'd like to speak with Bailey is kind of out of the question. I know that from when people were always trying to pursue us to find out things about my Michael. But recently, actually April 23rd, this was printed by the ACLU, which I became a part of when I saw what was going on with this young woman so that I could stay abreast of the situation. And they posted an email from Bailey, who has been fighting the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transsexual bullying at her middle school. And I want to read it to everybody. It starts out with, "Dear Renee, you know the worst part of getting bullied? It's when your school says it's okay, making you feel worthless and alone. After getting bullied, I had to fight for over a year to form a gay-straight alliance at school to help me and my friends. Now, with the support of tens of thousands ACLU supporters like you, I hope to be able to form the club soon. But I've been thinking about all the other kids like me who don't have a big petition, kids who face horrible name-calling and violence just for being gay at schools that do nothing. We have laws that say you can't discriminate against students because of their race, religion, or sex, but not their sexual orientation, or gender identity. Today we can start to change that. The Student Non-Discrimination Act, just introduced in Congress, would say that it's not okay for schools to discriminate against students just because they are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transsexual. I can't tell you how much that would mean to so many kids like me who are feeling alone and unprotected." That's a sad word. When I hear the word unprotected and you're talking about a 14-year-old, that makes me feel hurt inside, because the world is full of adults, and a lot of adults with power and money and the strength to make a difference, and yet nobody's listening. So I've just shared my story with journalists and the sponsors of the bill on a press briefing with the hope that it will inspire members of Congress to support this bill. But I can't do this alone. Will you join me in speaking out? And of course, yes, I wrote back, yes, I will sign the petition. I did sign the petition. I know it's a really big thing to pass a law, but I also know that lots of really big things start small. When I tried for over a year to get a gay straight alliance at my school, a lot of people told me that I should give up. But my mom and I reached out to the ACLU. Over 50,000 of you signed a petition. Hundreds of people packed a school board meeting, and we even got a plane banner flying overhead, and it made a difference. The Student Non-Discrimination Act would give students like me and our parents a legal option when schools ignore serious bullying. And it would prevent schools from discriminating against us, too. Not letting us bring our dates to a prom. Now, let's stop right there for a second. Not letting us bring our dates to a prom. You know, I have to think to myself, and I'm, as you all know, no spring chicken, 64, and when I was 14 and 15, I was aware of the fact that I had friends that were homosexual, and it wasn't something everybody talked about. It wasn't something even that we talked about privately, but everybody still knew. And those kids would get a fill-in to come to parties and come to the prom and things like that. And then they would meet up with the person that they really cared about after the dance. Now, I can remember that. We're talking about those kind of things taking place in the early 60s. Now, I want to remind everybody, too, of course, of all the years of the movie stars, the Rock Hudsons and the, who knows? Matter of fact, I picked up an Inquirer or one of those tonight because they always crack me up. And the front page is filled with all the people, all the stars, who's gay and who's straight in Hollywood, you know? And I thought to myself, what's ridiculous about that is who cares? Who cares? Unless you're in love with one of them and are disappointed because you're not the right gender, then who cares? What business is it of yours? So that hurts me to think that. And I remember my friends, you know, working around it. And I thought then that didn't seem right. Why do you have to pretend to be something that you're not? Isn't that one of the things we try to teach the children? You know, don't try to pretend to be something you're not, and yet here we are supporting that. So don't give up this time either. Not until every student can go to school without fear that they will be taunted, harassed, and made to feel worthless, while adults stand by and do nothing. Please sign the petition. Of course, like I said, I did. Not only does bullying get in the way of learning, but it can cause serious issues like depression and even suicide. Thank you, Bailey Silberstein. Now, I want very badly to reach out to this young woman. And when I found this came to my email, this particular paper that I just read. But there's an address at the end of it that's in New York City. So I'm going to attempt to write to that and make an offer to let Bailey speak on this show and use this for a venue to, you know, to talk about what's going on with her and see if we can't help her. The other things that I ran across today when I looked at my desk was the paperwork that I did discuss this with everybody, but I didn't read it. And that was in Port St. Lucie. This was on the news as well. This was on CBS and NBC. And I haven't heard any more. I tried to find out if there was any more information about this. This is the young man who was beaten by about 6 other kids. And him and his mom were on the news. And the worst part about this was apparently the young man said a swear word to his teacher, and the teacher called in some of the bigger boys, six of them I believe there was, and sent them out to find this 13-year-old and teach him a lesson, and then bring him back to apologize to her. And there's a video of it that they showed on television. And in the video, you see the teacher walking away and throwing her arm up in the air while she sees them with him on the floor, pinned against the wall. One boy's even hitting him with his belt, and they're kicking him and pummeling him. And she just threw her hand up in the air and walked down the hallway. Now, the last time I knew, the teacher was moved into a different part of the school, and I quote, where she's not around children. I really struggled to figure out where you would find a place that isn't around children in a school. And the boys had a suspension, and then they were brought back to school. And this young man had to change schools. So these two things, both of them in relatively close areas to where I am in West Palm Beach, here in the state of Florida, and both of these things, for me, aren't just about your run-of-the-mill bullying. They're not just about one kid picking on another and everything not being handled right. All the things that we talk about with Izzy, all the things that we've talked about with Linda Ellington, about teaching kids to know the difference about being bullied or when somebody's just trying to make friends with you, or all the different things that they have to learn how to cope with. These two scenarios, again, much to my chagrin, are from adults. And every time I search deep enough or dig deep enough, that's where I end up, standing in front of a grown-up. So I'm going to open up the phones. Shelley is here. I want to bring her in because I'm sure she'll have something to say about this. And if any of the rest of you are out there and would like to converse with us about these two things or anything else that you know that is going on in our local schools, let's talk. Hi, Shell.
Hi, Rain.
How are you?
How you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah, I got out a few minutes late, so I missed the very, very beginning of what you were talking about.
Well, I read the email that came to me from Bailey Silberstein, the 14-year-old who came out of the closet and was tired of being picked on and tried to organize the Gay Straight Alliance. And when the school shot her down, she went to the ACLU, her and her mom. And now it's in Congress. They're supposed to be voting in Congress. And I get these emails because I joined the I don't even know if that's the proper way to put it, but I signed in to be a member of the ACLU and to help, so I get letters and things like that and emails. Right.
Like an update. Okay, gotcha.
Yes, and opportunities to sign petitions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, about things that I believe in. So I'm enjoying that, and there are quite a few things that have happened that I was glad I was asked about, because one of them I wouldn't have signed, even though it seems like it's perfectly legitimate and would be a good idea, but there were things about it that I didn't like. So I'm glad I got involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the other one was the deal with the 13-year-old who got beat up by the other boys. And all of these things, like I tell the listeners, I keep an eye on, you know, with the computer. I look at the local channels, CBS, NBC, and ABC, and Fox Network, and CNN, to find out if there's any follow-up with any of these things. And it's very rare that there is, unless the victim pursues something.
Right.
Because if the victim is willing to forgive and forget, everybody else just sweeps it under the carpet.
Right. Well, it becomes a non-story at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, as far as the media is concerned, it's like, all right, well, there's nothing to report here. Meanwhile, that would bring closure to a lot of people. I think it is noteworthy to report the resolution to. They just leave everybody hanging in the air half the time. You never know what happens with most of these stories.
Well, I think that's the dilemma. There is no There is no closure. Because if the victim, you know, says, forget it, it's not worth it to me to keep fighting with everybody, and I don't, you know, I'll just deal with it myself. And a lot of times that's, you know, that's not good. We read about those kind of things every day. Then you don't hear anything, Shelley.
How can nothing happen to that teacher? There has to be some fun. Even if this kid doesn't press charges or doesn't go forward, the school should be going forward. The school should be doing something. There should be some result. What, if they just said it because he's not pressing charges? It's like it never happened?
Apparently. Yes,
wow.
Apparently that's exactly right. That's what I'm saying. If you, you know the old saying, the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And those sayings are so unbelievably true. And I was probably in my 40s when I understood that being the nice, sweet little Catholic girl I was, who would wait my turn and not ask for anything if I thought somebody else should have it first and things like that, many, many times didn't serve me very well.
Sorry.
And at the end of the day, nobody cared that I was that nice little Catholic girl. You know, nobody came up to me and said, Renee, that was really sweet of you to do that, or Renee, that was really sweet of you to not do that. That never happened. So, and I think that taints a lot of us, because when you have that realization, it's kind of like, here you are trying to be, you know, who you think you're supposed to be, and the only one who gets the attention is the one that's screaming and hollering at the other end of the hallway.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we've all seen it. You know, you're there, you're so busy, you don't have time to be running in the boss's office, you know, every 10 minutes, and because you're so busy getting the work done, and the person who's in there, who spends most of their time talking about what they're doing instead of actually doing something, is the person that gets the promotions and everything else, because they're in the boss's face, and the boss thinks they're doing all this stuff, and they never hear from you. They don't have a clue what you're doing.
Yeah.
I've seen that at many jobs.
So have I.
But there is a balance, you know. There's a way of letting people know who you are and what you are without being obnoxious, without necessarily being the squeaky wheel, but also without being the person who's like, I don't have to sing my praises. You know, in the job, you kind of do. Maybe not the rest of your life, because, you know, you shouldn't do things for recognition. You know, if you're being a nice person, you should be a nice person because you care about other people. But when it comes to work,
that's right,
it's a totally different story, because your worth to the powers that be is directly related to what they think you're doing, not what you're actually doing.
So you have to make sure
that they at least have an idea of what you're doing. But again, you know, people have to be true to who they are. You can't be obnoxious about it, but there is a way of getting a happy medium there. So having some integrity.
Well, and if you don't blow your own horn, nobody knows that you're making music. Let's face it.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I like that.
But true, right? Very, very
true.
And I've had many older people that I so respect and so love say that to me, and I'm like, and I can be very pig-headed about that and say, no, they should know. You know, if they really feel the way that I think they feel about me, they should know what I'm doing. I shouldn't have to tell anybody.
I think
you've heard me say that before.
Yep.
But I now, when I give advice about workplace drama, the first thing I do is I tell everybody keep a log, so that when you say you did something, you got something written down on paper that says you absolutely did do something, or you did do this, or you took care of that. Because otherwise, you know, it's your word against somebody else's. And like you say, if the somebody else has been spending every waking moment kissing butt, then anything you say isn't going to make any difference. You're going to have something to back it up. But
of course.
In regard to this young woman, who I am, you know, have just so much respect for, because she's so young, I think one of the things that she realizes is she's looking at a lifelong fight. And the earlier she can win one of the battles, the stronger she will become, and the more the more prepared she will be for the things that will happen in her future. Because it won't be, even though, like I said, tonight I picked up an Inquirer, one of those, and it's filled with the stories of all the gay couples in Hollywood. But people still, they're positive people, they're prominent, they're totally successful. But the minute they do anything wrong, you can bet everybody's going to come right down on them.
What astonishes me is that so many, like you said, so many people who are in the limelight, who are in politics, who are football players, for God's sake. You know the percentage of football players that are gay? It's astonishing. You know,
I mean,
so many of them have come out of the closet. And then here's these big, burly guys, and they've admitted to being gay, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then actors and actresses, and, you know, so you're talking people that are going to be, and people, you know, these are people that have audiences and have fans that, you know, couldn't care less. You know, they like them because of their athletic aptitude, or because of their acting skills, or their singing voice, or whatever their contribution is, you know? And it astonishes me that there is still so much bigotry towards people that are different, whether it be sexual orientation, and, you know, I discussed before, I don't use the word preference because it's not a choice, it's an orientation,
mm-hmm.
it's their genetic makeup,
mm-hmm.
you know, for 99% of them, okay? And it's not a disease, it's not like you can catch it by hanging out with somebody who's gay, so if you're straight, and you're hanging out.
Oh, I don't know. I was out with somebody one night who was gay, and by the end of the night, I wasn't sure anymore. So, you know, I don't know if that's true.
You're hilarious.
See how silly that is. That is so silly, isn't it? I mean, really. It's just so silly.
It's like, you know, these parents who don't want their kids to hang out with somebody who's gay, you know, or something like that. To me, it's mind-boggling, and I don't want to offend anybody. But it's ignorant, and I'm using that word not as an insult. I'm using it as an observation, because when you don't want your child to be around somebody who's different than you are, that is part of the problem with this world. All right. Now it's different when you're talking somebody who's different than them in illegal or immoral ways. I'm not talking about personality issues like that. What I'm talking about is different, like they have a different color skin or a different religion or a different orientation or something like that, but that they're decent people, okay? I'm not talking about somebody who's different in a negative way, as in a criminal or something like that. You know, that I'm not talking about that, you know, and then that's when you would want your parental instinct to kick in and say, no, you're not hanging out with that person. They're going to be a bad influence on you. Because somebody like that would be a bad influence. If you have somebody who's a thief or the drugs or something like that, they would try to then get the people in their circle into those same activities. Then you would have a bad influence. But when you're talking about somebody who's Jewish hanging around with somebody who's Catholic, they're not going to try to make them Jewish. Or if they're black, you know, they're not, you know, it's ridiculous. It really is. And it's like, the more I have friends from basically every nationality, every religious belief, all different types of sexual orientations, and it like you said, it makes my life interesting. It lets me see bits and pieces of other ways of living, and it just makes it interesting. It doesn't make me want to become them. It just makes it interesting. I don't want to be around just people that are like me. It's like, it's boring, you know, and it doesn't give you a well-rounded ability to deal with people, you know. The more you can have a comfort with people that are different than you, the more socially adept you are. It just makes you better in business. It makes you better in your personal dealings, even with people that are like you, because if you can deal with somebody that's very, very different from you and have a level of respect for them and a level of compassion and a level of just common courtesy, then that makes you even better for the people that are like you and that are in your close circle and that you would invite to your house. It just makes you more socially adept. So this is something that should be encouraged so that children don't grow up with fears about, really about nothing. You know, teach them to be concerned about things they need to be concerned about. The kid who wants to do something that's illegal or immoral and is trying to talk them into it. You know, harp on that kind of stuff, but not on the differences in us. The differences are what makes the world go round.
That's right. Well, and, you know, we embrace having kids read books about all other countries and all other stories and all other cultures and everything. That's okay. But they don't want them to get close enough in real life. And that's something else that just amuses the hell out of me. I think to myself, you know, you'd want your child to read all the books that they could get their hands on. When you find out your child likes to read, what parent isn't thrilled when they find that out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that their child really enjoys reading. And the, how many statements have you heard come from a parent's lips that, oh, my gosh, you can take yourself all over the world when you read?
That's right.
Well,
that's right.
Today, somebody said to me, I thought this was kind of funny. I hope this doesn't offend anybody, but I thought it was very cute. Somebody said to me, how is your radio show going? And I said, great. I'm loving it, and I'm loving what I'm learning. I'm loving what I'm able to pass on to others. And one lady in the group said, is it international, Rini? And another lady sitting there said, yeah, it goes to Miami.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
Yeah. So I was like, it made me giggle the whole rest of the day. And I thought to myself, see, now that, but that's the truth, isn't it?
That's,
you know,
right.
there was a terrible story on Facebook this week. And I clicked into it so that I could get the gist of it. It was about a woman whose husband was receiving an award at a very big soiree, political soiree, and the recipients of the awards could go in to the awards ceremony. The spouses had to go to the cocktail party before, and then they were asked not to come into the actual award ceremony. And this woman was Iranian. I believe she was Iranian. It doesn't say, but it says, you know, her skin is brown and all this kind of stuff. And she is all right with everything. And she's leaving when her husband takes off to go into this special ballroom for the awards. Now, that made me sad. When I read that, I thought to myself, gosh, your husband's getting an award and you're not allowed to be there? What kind of a place is this? And, you know, it's certainly not a humanitarian award. Otherwise, everybody would be welcome, it would seem like. So she gets down the stairs and she realizes that her husband took the keys to their car. So she tries to call him on the cell phone, and he's already got his cell phone turned off. So she goes over to the guards standing at the gate and tells them what happened, and they said, you can't get in without a ticket, sorry. And she said, well, I understand, and I won't go in. I just need to get halfway in. Somebody could escort me and just let my husband know that I need the keys to the car. Otherwise, I can't leave. I can't go anywhere. I can't go back to the hotel. And they said, that's too bad. Nobody gets in without a ticket. So she's standing there trying to figure out what she's going to do next, trying to be respectful of the so-called rules. And
right.
All of these young, beautiful American women come in, and nobody even asks to see a ticket. They just get let through. And
oh,
she
boy.
Sees this. And at one point in time, a woman says, I don't have a ticket. And the guy says, I'll escort you in myself. And so this woman is standing there, and she said, you know, in the I don't know, it was like an essay that she wrote and sent in to somebody. It said, I stood there kind of disbelieving, and I thought, I could feel what her feelings would be. Can you imagine that? And what can she say? It's not going to do her any good to start swearing and carrying on because they're not going to let her in. She has no recourse. She actually ended up sitting outside until the husband came out. And here he is there receiving an award, and that's the kind of treatment she received.
No, that's awful.
Well, it is. It's really awful. And when we talk about the things that we talk about on this show and the things that I hear on so many shows now are talking about pay it forward. Pay it forward. Well, last night on Facebook, before Izzy came on the air, I said, you know, when you're talking about paying it forward, that means you have to wait till somebody pays you. Maybe that's what's wrong. If everybody's standing around waiting for somebody to do something nice for them so that they can do something nice for somebody else, what the hell? I mean, where's the sense in that?
That's right.
I said, you know, don't worry about paying it forward. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Somebody else will get paid back if you do something nice for anybody else. I guarantee it. But then you read a story like that, and it's like, oh, my God.
No, and it's nonsense when you hear that kind of stuff because it's so super. Their behavior was so superficial. You know, what would it have taken for one of them to escort her? Yeah, she can't go in on her own, but she can go in with one of you. And if you're going to escort the young pretty thing, why wouldn't you escort anybody? You know, it's like they pick and choose. What is it? Because you have to be able to get somewhere with the person in order to make it worth your while. That's awful. You know, if you're going to do it because you think you might benefit from it, then it means it's something you should do.
Yeah. Well, it's the whole thing was is that they didn't want to respect her. They wanted to. They were treating her like a lesser person because of 911, and that's I think what hurt her the most. You know, even in the letter she wrote, I didn't have anything to do with that. Neither did my husband. My husband is an important man, and he's here to get an award, and he should be recognized for the things he's done. And yet I'm being treated this way because that was the land I was born in. Well, that's ridiculous. You know, that's like all the other idiot sayings. You know, if you're Irish, you're a drunk. If you're Italian, you're a womanizer or a thug. That was one of my favorite jokes, by the way, Italian foreplay. You hit the woman in the arm and say, are you awake? That was always one of my favorite jokes. But you see how, I mean, you know, so we've done this for years. It's not new that we put a tag on every person for what they look like. It's like we've talked about before. If you're fat, you're a glutton. I'm sure you eat too much and you know, this and that. And if you're too skinny, then you're probably anorexic or bulimic. And, you know, if you're too beautiful, I'm sure you had work done. And, you know, all these these things that we do as human beings, which we should be incredibly ashamed of. Because in most cases, it's simply not true. We just are what we are, or we are who we are. And I find it to be... upsetting because everybody wants to say something about the kids and their behavior. Tonight, Joshua gave me a video to watch on his phone. It was a high school, and the teacher's sitting at the front, and she hands out all these pamphlets and then sits back at her desk and is reading a book. And this young man with long blonde hair stands up and walks up to the front of the class, and he says, are you ever going to teach us anything? I've been in this class for however long. He says, all you've ever done is hand us pamphlets. That's not how you teach. Some of the kids in this room would really like to learn something, but we need to be taught, not just to be handed paperwork to look at and to make, you know, to make reports on. Don't you know how to teach? Would you like me to talk to you about how you should be teaching? And the teacher says, get out of my class. And he says, I am getting out of your class because it's boring and because you don't teach anybody anything. And he went on and got to the door.
Wow.
And he says, yeah, it was really something. And he was the only thing, what was the last thing he said? He did, he didn't really use any swear words, and he wasn't rude. He was, and he was very,
fed up.
yeah, he was. He definitely was angry and fed up. But I mean, he didn't say, you know, "F you, teacher." You don't know what he didn't do anything like that. He was, I don't know. He was in charge. And
right.
When she just said, "Get out of my class, get out of my class," he says, "I am getting out of your class." He said, "Because this isn't a class. You're not teaching anybody anything. I would rather go someplace and learn anything rather than sit in a class and just have you hand me papers to do." So after I watched it, Joshie came out and said to me, "What'd you think of that, Graham?" And I said, "Well, I thought he had a point." I said, as a matter of fact, I think I've mentioned that I went to school with Spike, grandson Spike, and I saw that a lot of the teachers just, like a university does, would stand up and expound a few things and talk about generalized information and then hand them a book and tell them to read, and they'd sit down and either play on the computer or their iPad or something. And I witnessed that. And I said to my grandson, I said, "Is this how all the teachers are?" And he said, "No." He said, "But some of them are, Graham." He said, "But it's all right because it gives us time to get other work done and stuff like that." So the kids made do with it. So when I said to Josh, I said, "Josh, that's true, isn't it, that too many teachers just give you, I mean, reading material like you're in university or something. And you're not. You're still at the learning stages to get you ready for a university, if that's the way you're going to go." I said, I don't. And he goes, "Graham, it's okay, because some of the teachers do that. You're right." He said, "But not all of them. A lot of them spend time and teach us." Of course, that's my Joshua. You know, he's very sweet young man, and he doesn't want anybody to think bad of people that he may like, you know, which I really appreciate about him. But he did say that, yeah, some of them do that. So, again, we have, you know, no matter how many times we try to bring it back to the kids and what can we do to help the kids, we still end up with looking at a grown-up.
Well, because that is the answer. That really is the answer. If we want the kids to start behaving differently and being able to make different choices, they have to see that. They have to see the adults around them making those choices, making those decisions, acting responsibly, acting decently, acting compassionately. You know, the younger generation is going to mimic the older generation. It's almost subconscious. Now, how many times have you seen a kid grow up in a family where they were abused and then they grew up to be an abuser? You know,
yeah.
Never in their wildest dreams did they ever think it was possible. They couldn't wait to get out of that situation. But then they have all this pent-up anger, and the first time they have somebody in their life that's vulnerable, either a wife or a child, then they start treating that wife or that child the way they were treated. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
wow, they don't even see it, you know? And
mm-hmm.
it's because it almost becomes a subconscious habit pattern for them. They've already developed that because it's the only thing they were ever exposed to, you know? So
mm-hmm.
if they're exposed to positive behavior, to being rational and reasonable, to being kind-hearted, they're subconsciously going to go to those types of attributes. It doesn't mean they're going to be a carbon copy of you, but what it means is that they're going to have some of these things instilled in them, and it's going to make it easier for them to then become their own unique person. You don't want carbon copies of you walking around, but you want them to have a good foundation to then develop their own personalities from. And the more positive things they can acquire to become unique with, the better off they'll be, because they'll just be able to do more. Being positive is creative, and when you're creative, that's exactly what it means. It means you can create yourself. You can become whatever you want to be because you create possibilities in your life. When you're negative, negative is destructive. It limits you. It the more negative you are, the more you limit your personality, and you end up growing into an adult that has very limited possibilities and limited horizons. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it also has to do with how successful people can be just by simply how negative or positive they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because more opens up to them when you're positive.
Well, and that's something else that we've talked about recently is morals. And, of course, life can be pretty scary when you're surrounded by immoral actions and immoral people. And very sadly, it's often true that we are. It's often true that people don't even realize that they've lost track of their morals. I often say that when I listen to young kids. We had the one show that night about sex and stuff like that, and we talked about promiscuity and things like that in teens, and some of the articles I've read that because they're handing out the morning after pill now to young girls as young as 15 without an adult without an adult's okay. So you don't have to tell your mom or dad, and if you did something wrong the night before, then that can be your new contraceptive. So if you show a severe lack of morals and sleep with somebody that you're not prepared to even be that close to and decide, you know, that was probably a mistake and need to go get a morning after pill now, we're letting kids do that. Now, part of me, I think you and I have had this conversation privately before. People always look at me and see how much I love children and everything and assume that I would be against abortion. I am not. I am pro-choice. And I do believe if you're not ready to be a parent, I don't believe in aborting a fetus that is old enough to be considered a baby. And, of course, there's mixed feelings about when that is. But right. I do know that there's a lot of women that give birth to a child that shouldn't have that right. So... Right. But now, when you talk about morals, it's like you're saying, well, it's okay. You know, it's not a big deal because sex isn't really much of anything. And it is. It's a lot. Sex is a lot. And it becomes a very, very big part of your life. And the emotions that go with sexual activity are grown-up emotions. They're not emotions that were designed to be handled by a 14-year-old.
I know. Well, that's one of the things when they talk about, and I've seen some of these science shows where they get these psychologists on there. You know, there's a lot of pedophiles, these men who will, engage in sexual activities with very, very young children, and they're convinced that they're not harming them because this is how they choose to show love to these children. They love them. I'm not talking about the ones that are criminal. I'm talking about the ones that, you know, do to their own children. You know, like, and they supposedly, in their heads, they love these children. But what the psychologist is saying is that a child that young, you know, they're going along with it because they don't know they can say no to it. But it's damaging them because they don't have the emotional ability to really, understand what their body is going through. It's foreign to them, and it damages them emotionally. It's not a show of love. It's actually power. They're succumbing to the power being thwarted over them because they want the attention of this particular adult, you know. So it turns into something that it's not supposed to be. And it's very, very damaging. Kids do not, you know, when you're talking about a 10-year-old, a 13-year-old, you know, even a teenager, they don't have the emotional maturity to handle what the body goes through with something like that. And that was one of the things when we were talking about nutrition the other night. This was something I had done when I was doing a lot of my research. But a lot of the steroids that are used with animals now, including chickens, by the way, chicken and pork, it's not just beef anymore. They use growth hormones and steroids on all animals now to make them grow unnaturally large, because to meet the demand of meat eaters. So now you have all these animals being injected with growth hormone that does not cook out of the flesh when you cook it. It's not like it's a bacteria; it's a chemical. It's still in the flesh when you eat them. And now you have a population eating steroids and growth hormones, and we have very sensitive balance to our system. So now you have kids that are, like you said the other day, like 10 and 11 years old, having sexual drives. Well, their bodies are developing sexually because of the imbalance in their hormones, but emotionally they're no different. Emotionally they're still 10 or 11 years old. So now they're having the physical desires without the emotional capability of handling what their body's going through. And it's one of the things that's causing anger amongst the younger generation, because it's almost like a disconnect. What their body is going through and what their mind is going through isn't in sync with each other, because they're not of the level of maturity to deal with all the fluctuations that they're feeling emotionally and physically at the same time.
Well, and even without all those additives and all the other stuff, I mean, I remember giving this speech to my own daughter, you know, saying, you know, I was like, I don't know, 35 or 36 or something like that, when I figured she was doing way too much thinking about sex. And I said, you know, there are times when I'm not prepared for the emotional curves that get thrown to you when you're having a sexual relationship, even when it's with somebody that, you know, you've signed, sealed, and delivered each other, you're married, and you know that everything is all right. There's just something about the emotions that come out, especially of a female, during sexual acts. And I said, there are times when I'm not prepared to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's no way. There is no way that even a 15-year-old is. I'm sorry. Even a very, very mature, very well endowed, maybe a over the hill chemically sensitized child is even going to be harder for them.
That's right.
Because you start questioning, you know, and all the things that run through your mind about right and wrong and good and bad and everything. It's too much for us. But again, if we don't bring back some of our morals, mind you, I know we'll never get to the point that we were so many years ago when you waited before you got married and, you know, and you saved yourself for the man you were going to live with the rest of your life and everything. I realize that's old school thinking and that will probably never come back. But the morality of picking and choosing, and the morality of not giving away a very important gift that you have to give to somebody that you really love, that needs to come back. That needs to be understood, and that needs to be respected.
Well, it's very intimate, and you're very vulnerable during that time, both emotionally and physically, obviously, you know. But, you know, it's like, I don't know that it would ever go back to, like you said, you know, people waiting for marriage. But I certainly would like to see it roll back a little bit, and for people to start being a little bit old-fashioned, and that being a little bit, discriminating, and not just sleeping with every partner they come across and things like that, because it becomes something that's not special anymore then. And it is a special act. It is a special form of intimacy. You don't necessarily have to be in love with the person, but you should at least have some feelings for them. You know, there should be something there on both sides. And, you know, I know some of my friends when I was in high school, and they were somewhat promiscuous, and I was not, and everybody knew that I was not, and nobody teased me about it, though, because I was so comfortable with my decision, and I dated. I had boyfriends, and nobody avoided dating me because they knew I wasn't promiscuous, you know, but I actually had a reputation as the good girl, and But nobody gave me a hard time about it because I was very adamant and comfortable with who I was. And so so for me, it was always very special, you know. And the times that I was intimate, it was with somebody that I had become friends with. It wasn't like a one-night stand type of a deal. So it was always very comfortable for me. And, you know, so, you know, here I am. I'm in my 50s, and I really don't have any regrets. I don't have any relationships where I said, oh, wow, I wish I hadn't gotten involved with that person or that person, because I did it when I was comfortable. I didn't allow myself to be talked into it. And I've always been very lucky that I kind of made those choices, because here I am and I'm very comfortable with how my life played out that way. I know some of my dear friends, and to this day they still have regrets because they got involved with people that afterwards it was like, oh my God, you know, here I made myself vulnerable to this guy, and now I can't even stand being around him. He's just like a lousy person, because they didn't even know him. They didn't even get to know him first, and they opened up that intimately to somebody that they didn't even know if it was a decent person or not, you know? And it's, like I said, you don't have to be in love with somebody, but at least have an idea of who they are before you make yourself that open to them. And it goes
both ways
for the guys, too. I mean, there are girls out there that are terribly promiscuous, and guys that are decent. You know, I'm not only talking about the girls. The guys need to be a little bit more discriminating also.
Well, and the other thing that could certainly happen without too many changes taking place, without people, you know, going back to the Middle Ages or anything, and that would be privacy. Some things need to be private and shouldn't be shared with everyone. And that's one of the things that's caused so many teen suicides in the last 5 or 6 years, and that is promiscuity and then somebody sharing it with everybody else. That has been a big part of young women's personal demise, because the shame is there, because somewhere in there are the morals, and then the shame comes out, and then the fact that everybody thinks it's all right to kiss and tell. Which is another thing that was a part of our morals when we were younger and years ago. You know, I mean, that was you watch an old movie and you hear every leading man say, oh, I don't kiss and tell. You know, well, now everybody kisses and does everything else and tells anybody who wants to listen.
You know, you got MySpace, you have blogs, you have Facebook, and it's like, well, the social media. And, you know, the social media is like a double-edged sword, because there's one part of it that, like your show. I mean, how many people do you touch with your show through Facebook? But it can also be damaging if you're not responsible with your words. Once you put it out there on Facebook or a blog or MySpace or whatever social network you use, okay, it's out there. It's not like you can go in with a pencil and erase later and take it back. So, and it's not even young people, some adults, but it's really, really rampant amongst younger people around teenagers, where they just indiscriminately, they get pissed off at somebody one day, and they just go on there and just, you know, type a whole bunch of horrible stuff, and then it's just out there forever. You know, and even if you take it back, you're going to be able to find everybody who read it and make them not read it. So even if there was a way of going back and taking it off of there, once it's out there, how are you ever going to know all the people that read it? For, like say you're not mad at that person a week later. Well, it's done. It's a done deal. You can't fix it.
Well, that's like there was a show on the other night, and that's what they talked about, is how many times have you regretted a click? And everybody in the conversation laughed and went, oh, my God. And I sat there thinking to myself, what are they talking about, a click? And then I realized what they were talking about. How many times have they put something into the computer, into their cell phone, into their iPad, into whatever they're utilizing for communication, and set a whole bunch of stuff to unload and then sent it. And we're sorry from then on out that they sent it. So, we talk a lot about writing and unloading by writing, and maybe this is a good time to say that when we talk about that, we are talking about the very old-fashioned practice of paper and pen. We are not talking about writing something on your Facebook page or emailing or blogging or tweeting or any of those things. We're talking about simply taking a very old-fashioned sheet of paper and a very old-fashioned Bic pen and writing your thoughts on that piece of paper that stays in your possession, so that later when you read it, it will help you and not be your demise. So, you know, it's not about sending it out there for the world to see. It's about for your own personal welfare and your own personal mental health when we talk about writing something down.
And especially when you're angry with somebody, you should always write it down. Like you said, write it down. Get it off your chest. If you're really angry with somebody or something, write it down. And you know what? Read it 24 hours later. I guarantee you a lot of the edge of that anger will be gone, and you'll rewrite it, and it'll be toned down. And if you read that 24 hours later, it'll be toned down again. Because a lot of times in the moment, we're in the heat of anger, and like all this stuff comes spewing out. But once we've vented, it's kind of like, all right, it's not such a big deal. Like I said, we put it in perspective now. We're not in the moment anymore. You know, we can be rational beings if we just use a little bit of self-control. And, you know, people don't have to give in to their anger. You know, I had an argument with one woman. Said, well, I have the right to be angry. I said, yeah, you have the right to have whatever reaction you want to, but does it serve you? When you get angry, don't you feel lousy? Doesn't your chest hurt? You get a headache and everything else? Why would you choose to go there just because you have the right to? I said, why wouldn't you choose to do something that was healthier and just kind of like let it go? You know, deal with it. Deal with the person in the most appropriate way, but deal with them in a way that's constructive and that doesn't make this thing get bigger than it started out. Diffuse it. Don't add more fuel to it, you know. And that's what people have lost the art of. It's like if you wrong somebody, they have to one-up you. Where did that come from? You know, instead of diffusing situations, now people have to come back and do something to you, and then it never ends.
It becomes a vicious cycle, yes.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Vicious cycle, exactly.
And who can hurt who more? I mean, you know, I always, whenever we talk about some of these things, I always envision some of the old comedies like Jackie Gleason and Alice, you know, Right to the Moon Alice, and all these things, and the way they would scream at each other in that little tiny New York kitchen and carry on with each other and unload. And then five minutes later, everything would be all over. Part of that is healthy. The thing that I think people don't understand is when you do let go, there still has to be some temper. You still have to be able to control your temper so that you don't say anything that can never be forgotten when you're having that kind of a blowout with a loved one. And that's another thing that you have to learn about, and it takes years to be able to get to that point. Some things you just don't say. I said to Izzy last night, we were having an argument as a brother and sister, and because of a call I had just had recently. And I said, you know, I said, it's hard to say some of these things to somebody that you love. And I said, it's not my style. And we talked about the fact that that's what he does before he counsels married couples. He first asks them questions and gets to see whether or not they're really in love with each other before he bothers. And I said, wow, that's awesome. That's awesome, Izzy, because I can understand that, can't you? I mean, because you could waste a lot of time trying to get two people to forgive each other that really don't belong together.
Right.
You know.
Well, it's funny because I was watching a Dr. Phil episode once, and it was all about how married couples could have better communication. And one of the things that Dr. Phil talks about is what you just said, is that when you're arguing with each other, you have to exert self-control. People can exert control over what comes out of their mouth, and don't go to those places that you know are going to hurt the other person.
Yeah, that hurt too bad, that cut too deep. That's right. We're out of time, sweetie. But it's been a good show. I'm glad you were able to join me. I hope The guest that was supposed to be with us tonight feels better soon and comes on the show and talks. That's Nurse Karen Barr, and she will talk about some of the things that she's learned in her position at Hippocrates about people's health and welfare with natural supplements and things like that. And I will also soon have a gentleman on the show that will talk to us about some natural supplements that are being grown in Thailand, and I look forward to that. So in the meantime, though, from my heart to yours, everybody, good night and God bless. Good night, Miss Shelley.
Good night, Renee. Good night, everyone.